reception was friendly enough.
What are the words for the first parallel kinetic binding?
I rattled them off glibly. He didn't seem surprised.
What was the binding that Master Kilvin used just a moment ago?
Capricatorial kinetic luminosity.
What is the synodic period?
I looked at him oddly. Of the moon? The question seemed a little out of sync with the other two. He nodded. 72 1/3 days, sir, give or take a bit. He shrugged and gave a wry smile, as if he'd expected to catch me with the last question.
Master Heme?
Heme looked at me over steepled fingers.
How much mercury would it take to reduce 2 gills of white sulphur?
He asked pompously, as if I'd already given the wrong answer. One of the things I'd learned during my hour of quiet observation was this. Master Heme was the king high bastard of the lot. He took delight in students' discomfort and did everything he could to badger and unsettle them. He had a fondness for trick questions. Luckily, this was one I had watched him use on other students. You see, you can't reduce white sulphur with mercury. Well, I drew the word out, pretending to think it through. Heme's smug smile grew wider by the second. Assuming you mean red sulphur, it would be about 41 ounces, sir. I smiled a sharp smile at him, all teeth.
Name the 9 prime fallacies, he snapped.
Simplification, generalization, circularity, reduction, analogy, false causality, semantism, irrelevancy.
I paused, not being able to remember the formal name of the last one. Ben and I had called it Nalt after Emperor Nalto. It galled me not being able to recall its real name as I had read it in Rhetoric and Logic just a few days ago. My irritation must have shown on my face. Heme glowered at me as I paused, saying,
So, you don't know everything after all?
He leaned back into his seat with a satisfied expression.
I wouldn't be here if I didn't think I had anything to learn, I said bitingly, before I managed to get my tongue under control again.
From the other side of the table, Kilvin gave a deep chuckle. Heme opened his mouth, but the Chancellor silenced him with a look before he could say anything else.
Now then,
the Chancellor began.
I think...
I too would ask some questions,
the man to the Chancellor's right said. He had an accent that I couldn't quite place, or perhaps it was that his voice held a certain resonance. When he spoke, everyone at the desk stirred slightly, then grew still, like leaves touched by the wind.
Master Namer,
the Chancellor said with equal parts deference and trepidation. Elodine was younger than the others by at least 12 years. Clean-shaven with deep eyes, medium height, medium build, there was nothing particularly striking about him except for the way he sat at the table, one moment watching something intently, the next minute bored, and letting his attention wander among the high beams of the ceiling above. He was almost like a child who had been forced to sit down with adults. I felt Master Elodine look at me. Actually, felt it. I suppressed a shiver.
Suekeet kasyaru krematestu?
He asked.
How well do you speak, Syaru?
Ryusa ta krelar dialatu.
Not very well, thank you. He lifted a hand, his index finger pointing upwards.
How many fingers am I holding up?
I paused for a moment, which was more consideration than the question seemed to warrant.
At least 1, I said, probably no more than 6.
He broke into a broad smile and brought his other hand up from underneath the table. It had 2 fingers upright. He waved them back and forth for the other masters to see, nodding his head from side to side in an absent, childish way. Then he lowered his hands to the table in front of him and grew suddenly serious.
Do you know the 7 words that will make a woman love you?
I looked at him, trying to decide if there was more to the question. When nothing more was forthcoming, I answered simply, "No." "They exist," he reassured me and sat back with a look of contentment. "Master Linguist," he nodded to the Chancellor.
"That seems to cover most of academia,"
the Chancellor said almost to himself. I had the impression that something had unsettled him, but he was too composed for me to tell exactly what.
"You will forgive me if I ask a few things of a less scholarly nature."
Having no real choice, I nodded. He gave me a long look that seemed to stretch several minutes.
"Why didn't Abenthy send a letter of recommendation with you?"
I hesitated. Not all traveling entertainers are as respectable as our troupe, so understandably not everyone respected them. But I doubted that lying was the best course of action. "He left my troupe 3 years ago. I haven't seen him since." I saw each of the masters look at me. I could almost hear them doing the mental arithmetic, calculating my age backwards.
"Oh, come now,"
Hemmer said disgustedly and moved as if he would stand. The Chancellor gave him a dark look, silencing him.
"Why do you wish to attend the university?"
I stood dumbfounded. It was the one question I was completely unprepared for. What could I say? 10,000 books? Your archives? I used to have dreams of reading there when I was young. True, but too childish. I want revenge against the Chandrian? Too dramatic. To become so powerful that no one will ever be able to hurt me again? Too frightening. I looked up to the Chancellor and realized I'd been quiet for a long while. Unable to think of anything else, I shrugged and said, "I don't know, sir. I guess I'll have to learn that too." The Chancellor's eyes had taken on a curious look by this point, but he pushed it aside as he said,
"Is there anything else you would like to say?"
He had asked the question of the other applicants, but none of them had taken advantage of it. It seemed almost rhetorical, a ritual before the masters discussed the applicant's tuition. "Yes, please," I said, surprising him. "I have a favor to ask beyond mere admission." I took a deep breath, letting their attention settle on me. "It has taken me nearly 3 years to get here. I may seem young, but I belong here as much, if not more, than some rich lordling who can't tell salt from cyanide by tasting it." I paused. "However, at this moment I have 2 jots in my purse and nowhere in the world to get more than that. I have nothing worth selling that I haven't already sold. Admit me for more than 2 jots, and I will not be able to attend. Admit me for less, and I will be here every day, while every night I will do what it takes to stay alive while I study here. I will sleep in alleys and stables, wash dishes for kitchen scraps, beg pennies to buy pens. I will do whatever it takes." I said the last words fiercely, almost snarling them. "But admit me free, and give me 3 talents so I can live and buy what I need to learn properly, and I will be a student the likes of which you have never seen before." There was a half breath of silence, followed by a thunderclap of a laugh from Kilvin.
"Ha!" he roared. "If 1 student in 10 had half his fire, I'd teach with a whip and chair instead of chalk and slate."
He brought his hand down hard on the table in front of him. This sparked everyone to begin talking at the same time in their own varied tones. The Chancellor made a little wave in my direction, and I took the chance to seat myself in the chair that stood at the edge of the circle of light. The discussion seemed to go on for quite a long while, but even 2 or 3 minutes would have seemed like an eternity sitting there while a group of old men debated my future. There was no actual shouting, but a fair amount of hand-waving, most of it by Master Hemme, who seemed to have taken the same dislike of me that I had for him. It wouldn't have been so bad if I could have understood what they were saying, but even my finely tuned eavesdropper's ears couldn't quite make out what was being said. Their talking died down suddenly, and then the Chancellor looked in my direction, motioning me forward.
"Let it be recorded," he said formally, "that Quoth, son of—"
He paused and then looked at me inquiringly.
"Arledon,"
I supplied. The name sounded strange to me after all these years. Master Lauren turned to look in my direction, blinking once.
"Son of Arledon is admitted into the university for the continuance of his education on the 43rd of Caitlin. His admission into the Arcanum contingent upon proof that he has mastered the basic principles of sympathy. Official sponsor being one Kilvin, Master Artificer. His tuition shall be set at the rate of less 3 talents.
I felt a great dark weight settle inside me. 3 talents might as well be all the money in the world for any hope I had in earning it before the term began. Working in kitchens, running errands for pennies, I might be able to save that much in a year if I was lucky. I held a desperate hope that I could cut purse that much in time, but I knew the thought to be just that. Desperate. People with that sort of money generally knew better than to leave it hanging in a purse. I didn't realize that the masters had left the table until one of them approached me. I looked up to see the master archivist approaching me. Lauren was taller than I would have guessed, over 6.5 feet. His long face and hands made him look almost stretched. When he saw he had my attention, he asked,
"Did you say your father's name was Arledon?"
He asked it very calmly, with no hint of regret or apology in his voice. It suddenly made me very angry that he should stifle my ambitions of getting into the university, then come over and ask about my dead father as easy as saying good morning. "Yes," I said tightly.
"Arledon the Bard."
My father always thought of himself as a trooper. He never called himself bard or minstrel. Hearing him referred to in that way irritated me even more, if that were possible. I didn't deign to reply, merely nodded once, sharply. If he thought my response terse, he didn't show it.
"I was wondering which troop he performed in."
My thin restraint burst.
"Oh, you were wondering,"
I said with every bit of venom my troop-sharpened tongue could muster.
"Well, maybe you can wonder a while longer. I'm stuck in ignorance now. I think you can abide a while with a little piece of it yourself. When I come back after earning my 3 talents, maybe then you can ask me again."
I gave him a fierce look, as if hoping to burn him with my eyes. His reaction was minimal. It wasn't until later that I found getting any reaction from Master Lauren was about as likely as seeing a stone pillar wink. He looked vaguely puzzled at first, then slightly taken aback. Then, as I glared up at him, he gave a faint, thin smile and mutely handed me a piece of paper. I unfolded and read it. It read, "Quoth, spring term, tuition, -3 talents. Less 3 talents, of course. Relief flooded me as if it were a great wave that swept my legs from beneath me. I sat suddenly on the floor and wept. Chapter 37 Bright-Eyed. Lauren led the way across a courtyard.
"That is what most of the discussion was about,"
Master Lauren explained, his voice as passionless as stone.
"You had to have a tuition. Everyone does."
I had recovered my composure and apologized for my terrible manners. He nodded calmly and offered to escort me to the office of the bursar to ensure that there was no confusion regarding my admission fee.
"After it was decided to admit you in the manner you had suggested,"
Lauren gave a brief but significant pause, leading me to believe that it had not been quite as simple as that,
"there was the problem that there was no precedent set for giving out funds to enrolling students.
He paused again.
A rather unusual thing.
Lauren led me into another stone building, through a hallway and down a flight of stairs.
Hello, Riam.
The bursar was an elderly, irritable man who became more irritable when he discovered he had to give money to me rather than the other way around. After I got my 3 talents, Master Lauren led me out of the building. I remembered something and dug into my pocket, glad for an excuse to divert the conversation.
I have a receipt from the broken binding.
I handed him the piece of paper, wondering what the owner would think when the university's master archivist showed up to redeem the book a filthy street urchin had sold him.
Master Lauren, I appreciate your agreeing to do this, and I hope you won't think me ungrateful if I ask another favor.
Lauren glanced at the receipt before tucking it into a pocket and looked at me intently. No, not intently, not quizzically. There was no expression on his face at all. No curiosity, no irritation. Nothing. If not for the fact that his eyes were focused on me, I would have thought he'd forgotten I was there.
Feel free to ask, he said.
That book, it's all I have left from that time in my life. I would very much like to buy it back from you someday, when I have the money.
He nodded, still expressionless.
That can be arranged. Do not waste your worry on its safety. It will be kept as carefully as any book in the archives.
Lauren raised a hand, gesturing to a passing student. A sandy-haired boy pulled up short and approached nervously. Radiating deference, he made a nod that was almost like a bow to the master archivist.
Yes, Master Lauren?
Lauren gestured to me with one of his long hands.
Simon, this is Quoth. He needs to be shown about, signed to classes and the like. Kilvin wants him in artificing. Trust to your judgment otherwise. Will you tend to it?
Simon nodded again and brushed his hair out of his eyes.
Yes, sir.
Without another word, Lauren turned and walked away, his long strides making his black master's robes billow out behind him. Simon was young for a student, though still a couple of years my senior. He stood taller than me, but his face was still boyish, his manner boyishly shy.
Do you have somewhere to stay yet?
He asked as we started to walk.
Room at an inn, or anything?
I shook my head. I just got in today. I haven't thought much further than getting through admissions. Simon chuckled.
Ha! I know what that's like. I still get sweaty at the beginning of each term.
He pointed to the left, down a wide lane lined with trees.
Let's head to the mews first, then.
I stopped walking.
I don't have a lot of money,
I admitted. I hadn't planned on getting a room. I was used to sleeping outside, and I knew I would need to save my 3 talents for clothes, food, paper, and next term's tuition. I couldn't count on the master's generosity 2 terms in a row.
Admissions didn't go that well, huh?
Simmons said sympathetically as he took my elbow and steered me towards another one of the grey university buildings. This one was 3 stories tall, many-windowed, and had several wings radiating out from a central hub.
Don't feel bad about it. I got nervous and pissed myself the first time through, figuratively.
I didn't do that badly, I said, suddenly very conscious of the 3 talents in my purse.
But I think I offended Master Lauren. He seemed a little chilly,
Simon asked.
Distant, like an unblinking pillar of stone?
He laughed.
Lauren is always like that. Rumour has it that Elksadal has a standing offer of 10 gold marks to anyone who can make him laugh.
Oh, I relaxed a little.
That's good. He's the last person I'd want to get on the wrong side of. I'm looking forward to spending a lot of time in the archives. Just handle the books gently, and you'll get along fine. He's pretty detached for the most part, but be careful around his books.
He raised his eyebrows and shook his head.
He's fiercer than a mother bear protecting her cubs. In fact, I'd rather get caught by a mother bear than have Lauren see me folding back a page.
Simon kicked at a rock, sending it skipping down the cobblestones.
Okay,
You've got options in the Muse. A talent will get you a bunk and a meal chip for the term, he shrugged. Nothing fancy, but it keeps the rain off. You can share a room for 2 talents or get 1 all to yourself for 3. What's a meal chip? Meals are 3 a day over in the mess. He pointed to a long, low-roofed building across the lawn. The food isn't bad, so long as you don't think too hard about where it might have come from. I did some quick arithmetic. A talent for 2 months' worth of meals and a dry place to sleep was as good a deal as I could hope for. I smiled at Simon. Sounds like just the thing. Simon nodded as he opened the door into the Muse. Punks it is, then. Come on, let's find a steward and get you signed up. The bunks for non-Arcanum students were on the 4th floor of the east wing of Muse, farthest from the bathing facilities on the ground floor. The accommodations were as Sim had described, nothing fancy, but the narrow bed had clean sheets, and there was a trunk with a lock where I could keep my meagre possessions. All the lower bunks had already been claimed, so I took an upper one in the far corner of the room. As I looked out of one of the narrow windows from on top of my bunk, I was reminded of my secret place high on Tarbeen's rooftops. The similarity was oddly comforting. Lunch was a bowl of steaming hot potato soup, beans, narrow rashers of fatty bacon, and fresh brown bread. The room's large plank tables were nearly half full, seating about 200 students. The room was full of the low murmur of conversation, punctuated by laughter and the metallic sound of spoons and forks scraping against the tin trays. Simon steered me to the back corner of the long room. 2 other students looked up as we approached. Simon made a one-handed gesture to me as he set down his tray.
Everyone, meet Quoth, our newest dewy-eyed first-termer.
He gestured from one person to the next.
Quoth, these are the worst students the Arcanum has to offer. Manet and Willem.
Already met him, Willem said.
He was the dark-haired Kaeldim from the archives.
You really were headed to admissions, he said, mildly surprised. I thought you were dealing me false iron.
He reached out his hand for me to shake.
Welcome.
Kaelu, anyway,
Manet muttered, looking me over. He was at least 50 years old, with wild hair and a grizzled beard. He wore a slightly dishevelled look, as if he'd only woken up a few minutes ago.
Am I as old as I feel, or is he as young as he looks?
Both,
Simon said cheerfully as he sat down.
Quoth, Manet here has been in the Arcanum for longer than all of us put together.
Manet snorted.
Give me some credit, I've been in the Arcanum longer than any of you have been alive.
And still a lolialia,
Willem said. His thick Siaru accent made it hard to tell if he was being sarcastic or not.
Huzzah to being an Alea, Manet said earnestly. You boys will regret it if you move any farther up the ranks, trust me. It's just more hassle and higher tuitions.
We want our guilders, Manet, Simon said, preferably sometime before we're dead.
The guilder is overrated too, Manet said, tearing off a piece of bread and dunking it in his soup.
The exchange had an easy feel, and I guessed this was a familiar conversation.
How'd you do?
Simon asked Willem eagerly.
7 and 8,
Willem grumbled. Simon looked surprised.
What in God's name happened? Did you punch one of them?
Fumbled my cipher, Willem said sullenly, and Lauren asked about the influence of sub-infudation on Modigan currency. Kelvin had to translate, even then I could not answer.
Ah, my soul weeps for you, Sim said lightly. You trounced me these last 2 terms. I was bound to catch a break sooner or later. I got 5 talents even this term.
He held out his hand.
Pay up.
Willem dug into his pocket and handed Sim a copper jot. I looked at Manet.
Aren't you in on it?
The wild-haired man huffed a laugh and shook his head.
Ha! There'll be some long odds against me,
he said, his mouth half full.
Let's hear it,
Simon said with a sigh.
How much this term?
1 and 6,
Manet said, grinning like a wolf. Before anyone could think to ask me what my tuition was, I spoke up.
I heard about someone getting a 30-talent tuition. Do they usually get that high?
Not if you have the good sense to stay low in the rankings, Manet grumbled.
Only nobility, Willem said. Cramlish bastards with no business having their study here. I think they stoke up high tuitions just so they can complain.
I don't mind, Manet said. Take their money, keep my tuition low.
I jumped as a tray clattered down onto the other side of the table.
I assume you're talking about me.
The owner of the tray was blue-eyed and handsome, with a carefully trimmed beard and high Modigan cheekbones. He was dressed in rich, muted colours. On his hip was a knife with a worked wire hilt, the first weapon I'd seen anyone wearing at the university.
Savoy,
Simon looked stunned.
What are you doing here?
I ask myself the same thing.
Savoy looked down at the bench.
Are there no proper chairs in this place?
He took his seat, moving with an odd combination of graceful courtliness and stiff, affronted dignity.
Excellent. Next I'll be eating with a trencher and throwing bones to the dogs over my shoulder.
Etiquette dictates it be the left shoulder, Your Highness,
Manet said around a mouthful of bread, grinning. Savoy's eyes flashed angry, but before he could say anything, Simon spoke up.
What happened?
My tuition was 68 Strelaum, he said indignantly.
Simon looked nonplussed.
Is that a lot?
It is.
A lot,
Savoy said sarcastically.
And for no good reason. I answered their questions. This is a grudge, plain and simple. Mandrag does not like me. Neither does Hemme. Besides, everyone knows they squeeze the nobility twice as hard as you lot, bleeding us dry as stones.
Simon's nobility, Manet pointed a spoon. He seems to do fine for himself.
Savoy exhaled sharply through his nose.
Simon's father is a paper duke, bowing to a tin king in Artur. My father's stables have longer bloodlines than half you Arturan nobles.
Simon stiffened slightly in his seat, though he didn't look up from his meal. Willem turned to face Savoy, his dark eyes going hard. But before he could say anything, Savoy slumped, rubbing his face in one hand.
I'm sorry, Sim. My house and name to you. It's just, things were going to be better this term, but now they're worse instead. My allowance wouldn't even cover my tuition, and no one will extend me more credit. Do you know how humiliating that is? I've had to give up my rooms at the Golden Pony. I'm on the third floor of Mews. I almost had to share a room. What would my father say if he knew?
Simon, his mouth full, shrugged and made a gesture with his spoon that seemed to indicate that there was no offence taken.
Maybe things would go better for you if you didn't go in there looking like a peacock, Manet said. Leave off the silk when you go through admissions,
Is that how it is?
Savoy said, his temper flaring again.
Should I abase myself, rub ashes in my hair, tear my clothes?
As he grew angrier, his lilting accent became more pronounced.
No! They are none of them better men than me. I need not bow to them.
There was a moment of uncomfortable silence at the table. I noticed more than a few of the surrounding students were watching the show from the nearby tables.
Hiltatiam, Savoy continued. There is nothing in this place I do not hate. Your weather is wild and uncivilized, your religion barbaric and prudish, your whores are intolerably ignorant and unmannerly, your language barely has the subtlety to express how wretched this place is.
Savoy's voice grew softer the longer he spoke, until he almost seemed to be speaking to himself.
My blood goes back 50 generations, older than tree or stone, and I am come to this.
He put his head against the palms of his hands and looked down at his tin tray.
Barley bread! Gods all around us! A man is meant to eat wheat!
I watched him while chewing a mouthful of the fresh brown bread. It tasted wonderful.
I don't know what I was thinking,
Savoy said suddenly, getting to his feet.
I can't deal with this!
He stormed off, leaving his tray on the table.
That's Savoy,
Manet said to me in an offhand manner. Not a bad sort, though he's usually not nearly as drunk as that.
He's Modigan.
Simon laughed.
You don't get more Modigan than Savoy.
You should not prod at him,
Willem said to Manet. His rough accent made it hard for me to tell if he was rebuking the older student, but his dark, kildish face showed definite reproach. As a foreigner, I guess he sympathized with Savoy's difficulty adjusting to the language and culture of the Commonwealth.
He is having a rough time of it, Simon admitted. Remember when he had to let his manservant go?
Mouthful, Manet made a gesture with both hands as if playing an imaginary violin. He rolled his eyes, his expression vastly unsympathetic.
He had to sell his rings this time around, I added.
Willem, Simon, and Manet turned to look at me curiously.
There were pale lines on his fingers,
I explained, holding up my hand to demonstrate. Manet gave me a close looking over.
Well now, our new student seems to be all manner of clever.
He turned to Willem and Simon.
Lads, I'm in a betting mood. I'll wager 2 jots that our young Quoth makes it into the Arcanum before the end of his 3rd term.
3 terms, I said, surprised. They told me all I had to do was prove I mastered the basic principles of sympathy.
Mamet gave me a gentle smile.
They tell everyone that. Principles of sympathy is one of the classes you'll have to slog through before they elevate you to Elia.
He turned back to Will and Sim expectantly.
How about it? 2 jots?
I'll bet.
Willem gave me a small apologetic shrug.
No offence, I play the odds.
What'll you be studying then? Manet asked as they shook on it.
The question caught me off guard.
Everything, I guess.
You sound like me 30 years ago,
Manet chuckled.
Where are you going to start?
The Chandrian, I said. I'd like to know as much about them as possible.
Manet frowned, then burst out laughing.
Well, that's fine and good, I suppose. Simir studies fairies and pixies. Will there believes in all manner of silly damn kildish sky spirits and such.
He puffed himself up absurdly.
I'm big on imps and shamblemen myself.
I felt my face get hot with embarrassment.
God's body, Manet, Sim cut him off. What has got into you?
I just bet 2 jots on a boy who wants to study bedtime stories.
Manet groused, gesturing to me with his fork.
He meant folklore, that sort of thing.
Willem turned to look at me.
You're looking to work in the archives? Folklore's a piece of it,
I hedged quickly, eager to save face.
I want to see if different cultures' folk tales conform to Tekum's theory of narrative septuagy.
Sim turned back to Manet.
See? Why are you so twitchy today? When's the last time you slept?
Don't take that tone with me, Manet grumbled. I caught a few hours last night.
And which night was that?
Sim pressed. Manet paused, looking down at his tray.
Felling night?
Willem shook his head, muttering something in Siaru. Simon looked horrified.
Manet, yesterday was Kendling. Has it been 2 days since you slept?
Probably not,
Manet said uncertainly.
I always lose track of things during admissions. There aren't any classes. It throws off my schedule. Besides, I've been caught up in a project in the fishery.
He trailed off, scrubbing at his face with his hands, then looked up at me.
They're right. I'm a little off my head right now. Tekum septuagy, folklore and all that. It's a bit bookish for me, but a fine thing to study. I didn't mean any offence.
None taken,
I said easily, and nodded at Savoy's tray.
Slide that over here, would you? If your young noble's not coming back, I'll have his bread.
After Simon took me to sign up for classes, I made my way to the archives, eager to have a look around after all these years of dreaming. This time, when I entered the archives, there was a young gentleman sitting behind the desk, tapping a pen on a piece of paper that bore the marks of much rewriting and crossing out. As I approached, he scowled and scratched out another line. His face was built to scowl. His hands were soft and pale. His blinding white linen shirt and richly dyed blue vest reeked of money. The part of me that was not long removed from Tarbin wanted to pick his pocket. He tapped his pen for another few moments before laying it down with a vastly irritated sigh.
Name,
he said without looking up. Quoth. He flipped through the ledger, found a particular page and frowned.
You're not in the book.
He glanced up briefly and scowled again before turning back to whatever verse he was labouring over. When I made no signs of leaving, he flicked his fingers as if shooing away a bug.
Feel free to piss off.
I've just... Ambrose put down his pen again.
Listen,
he said slowly as if explaining to a simpleton.
You're not in the book.
He made an exaggerated gesture toward the ledger with both hands.
You don't get inside.
He made another gesture to the inner doors.
The end.
I've just gone through admissions. He tossed up his hands, exasperated.
Then of course you're not in the book.
I dug into a pocket for my admission slip. Master Lauren gave me this himself.
I don't care if he carried you here piggyback,
Ambrose said, pointedly re-dipping his pen.
Now quit wasting my time. I have things to do.
Wasting your time? I demanded, my temper finally wearing thin. Do you have any idea what I've gone through to get here? Ambrose looked up at me, his expression growing suddenly amused.
Wait, let me guess,
he said, laying his hands flat on the table and pushing himself to his feet.
You were always smarter than the other children back in Clodhump or whatever little one-whore town you're from. Your ability to read and count left the local villagers awestruck.
I heard the outer door open and shut behind me, but Ambrose didn't pay it any attention as he walked around to lean against the front of the desk.
Your parents knew you were special, so they saved up for a couple of years, bought you a pair of shoes, and sewed the pig blanket into a shirt.
He reached out to rub the fabric of my new clothes between his fingers.
It took months of walking, hundreds of miles bumping along in the backs of mule carts, but in the end,
he made an expansive gesture with both hands,
praise Talu and all his angels, here you are, all bright-eyed and full of dreams.
I heard laughter and turned to see that two men and a young woman had come in during his tirade.
God's body, Ambrose, what's got you started?
Goddamn first-termers!
Ambrose groused as he headed back around to sit behind the desk.
Come in here dressed like ragpiles and act like they own the place.
The three newcomers walked toward the doors marked stacks. I fought down a hot flush of embarrassment as they looked me up and down.
Are we still heading to the Aeolian tonight?
Ambrose nodded.
Of course. Sixth bell.
Aren't you going to check to see if they're in the book?
I asked as the door closed behind them. Ambrose turned back to me, his smile bright, brittle, and by no means friendly.
Listen, I'm going to give you a little advice, for free. Back home, you were something special. Here, you're just another kid with a big mouth. So address me as Rela. Go back to your bunk and thank whatever pagan god you pray to that we're not inventors. My father and I would chain you to a post like a rabid dog.
He shrugged.
Or don't. Stay here. Make a scene. Start to cry. Better yet, take a swing at me.
He smiled.
I'll give you a thrashing and get you thrown out on your ear.
He picked up his pen and turned back to whatever he was writing. I left. You might think that this encounter left me disheartened. You might think I felt betrayed, my childhood dreams of the university cruelly shattered. Quite the contrary. It reassured me. I had been feeling rather out of my element until Ambrose let me know in his own special way that there wasn't much difference between the university and the streets of Tarbin. No matter where you are, people are basically the same. Besides, anger can keep you warm at night, and wounded pride can spur a man to wondrous things. Chapter 38 Sympathy in the Mains. Maine's was the oldest building at the university. Over the centuries, it had grown slowly in all directions, engulfing smaller buildings and courtyards as it spread. It had the look of an ambitious architectural breed of lichen that was trying to cover as many acres as it could. It was a hard place to find your way around. Hallways took odd turns, dead-ended unexpectedly, or took long, rambling roundabout paths. It could easily take 20 minutes to walk from one room to another, despite the fact that they were only 50 feet apart. More experienced students knew shortcuts, of course, which workrooms and lecture halls to cut through to reach your destination. At least one of the courtyards had been completely isolated and could only be accessed by climbing through a window. Rumor had it that there were some rooms bricked off entirely, some with students still inside. Their ghosts were rumored to walk the halls at night, bewailing their fate and complaining about the food in the mess. My first class was held in Maine's. Luckily, I had been warned by my bunkmates that Maine's was difficult to navigate, so despite getting lost, I still arrived with time to spare. When I finally found the room for my first class, I was surprised to find it resembled a small theater. Seats rose in tiered semicircles around a small raised stage. In larger cities, my troupe had performed in places not unlike this one. The thought relaxed me as I found a seat in the back. I was a jangling mass of excitement as I watched other students slowly trickle into the room. Everyone was older than me by at least a few years. I reviewed the first 30 sympathetic bindings in my head as the theater filled with anxious students. There were perhaps 50 of us in all, making the room about 3/4 full. Some had pen and paper with hardbacks to write on, some had wax tablets. I hadn't brought anything, but that didn't worry me over much. I've always had an excellent memory. Master Hemme entered the room and made his way onto the stage to stand behind a large stone work table. He looked impressive in his dark master's robes, and it was bare seconds before the whispering, shuffling theater of students hushed to silence.
"So you want to be arcanists," he said. "You want magic like you've heard about in bedtime stories. You've listened to songs about Tabalin the Great, roaring sheets of fire, magic rings, invisible cloaks, swords that never go dull, potions to make you fly."
He shook his head, disgusted.
"Well, if that's what you're looking for, you can leave now, because you won't find it here. It doesn't exist."
At this point, a student came in, realized he was late, and moved quickly into a vacant seat. Hemme spotted him, though.
"Hello, glad you chose to attend. What is your name?"
"Gel,"
the boy said nervously.
"I'm sorry, I had a bit of a hard time."
"Gel," Hemme interrupted, "why are you here?"
Gel gaped for a moment before managing to say,
"For principles of sympathy?"
"I do not appreciate tardiness in my class. For tomorrow, you may prepare a report on the development of the sympathy clock, its differences from the previous, more arbitrary clocks that used harmonic motion, and its effect on the accurate treatment of time."
The boy twisted in his seat.
"Yes, sir."
Hemme seemed satisfied with the reaction.
"Very well, what is sympathy, then?"
Another boy hurried in, clutching a hardback. He was young, by which I mean he looked to be no more than 2 years older than me. Hemme stopped him before he could make it into a seat.
"Hello there," he said in an over-courteous tone. "And you are?"
"Basil, sir."
The boy stood awkwardly in the aisle. I recognized him. I had spied on his admissions interview.
"Basil, you wouldn't happen to be from Ill, would you?"
Hemme asked, smiling sharply.
"No, sir."
"Ah,"
Hemme said, feigning disappointment.
"I had heard that Illish tribes used the sun to tell time and, as such, have no true concept of punctuality. However, as you're not Illish, I can see no excuse for being late, can you?"
Basil's mouth worked silently for a moment as if to make some excuse, then apparently decided better of it.
"No, sir."
"Good.
For tomorrow, you can prepare a report on Ill's lunar calendar compared to the more accurate, civilized Arcturan calendar that you should be familiar with by now. Be seated.
Basil slunk wordlessly into a nearby seat like a whipped dog. Heme gave up all pretext of lecture and lay in wait for the next tardy student. Thus it was that the hall was tensely silent when she stepped hesitantly into the room. It was a young woman of about 18, a rarity of sorts. The ratio of men to women in the university is about 10 to 1. Heme's manner softened when she entered the room. He moved quickly up the steps to greet her.
Ah, my dear, I am suddenly pleased that we have not yet begun today's discussion.
He took her by the elbow and led her down a few of the steps to the first available seat. She was obviously embarrassed by the attention.
I'm sorry, Master Heme. Mainz is bigger than I'd guessed.
No worry,
Heme said in a kindly fashion.
You're here, and that's what matters.
He solicitously helped her arrange her paper and ink before returning to the stage. Once there, it seemed as if he might actually lecture, but before he began, he looked back to the girl.
I'm sorry, miss.
She was the only woman in the room.
Poor manners on my part. What is your name?
Rhea.
Rhea, is that short for Rian?
Yes, it is,
she smiled.
Rian, would you please cross your legs?
The request was made with such an earnest tone that not even a titter escaped the class. Looking puzzled, Rian crossed her legs.
Now that the gates of hell are closed, Heme said in his normal, rougher tones, we can begin.
And so he did, ignoring her for the rest of the lecture, which, as I see it, was an inadvertent kindness. It was a long 2.5 hours. I listened attentively, always hoping that he would come to something I hadn't learned from Abenthy, but there was nothing. I quickly realized that while Heme was discussing the principles of sympathy, he was doing it at a very, very basic level. This class was a colossal waste of my time. After Heme dismissed the class, I ran down the stairs and caught him just as he was leaving through a lower door. Master Heme? He turned to face me.
Oh, yes, our boy prodigy. I wasn't aware you were in my class. I didn't go too fast for you, did I?
I knew better than to answer that honestly.
You covered the basics very clearly, sir. The principles you mentioned today will lay a good foundation for the other students in the class.
Diplomacy is a large part of being a trooper. He puffed up a bit at my perceived compliment, then looked more closely at me.
Other students?
He asked.
I'm afraid I'm already familiar with the basics, sir. I know the 3 laws and the 14 corollaries, as well as the first 90.
Yes, yes, I see,
he cut me off. I'm rather busy right at the moment. We can speak of this tomorrow, before class.
He turned and walked briskly away. Half a loaf being better than none, I shrugged and headed for the archives. If I wasn't going to learn anything from Heme's lectures, I might as well start educating myself. This time when I entered the archives, there was a young woman sitting behind the desk. She was strikingly beautiful, with long dark hair and clear bright eyes. A notable improvement over Ambrose, to be sure. She smiled as I approached the desk.
What's your name?
Quoth, I said, son of Arlidan. She nodded and began to page through the ledger. What's yours? I asked to fill the silence.
Thela,
she said without looking up, then nodded to herself and tapped the ledger.
There you are. Go on in.
There were 2 sets of double doors leading out of the antechamber, one marked stacks and the other tomes. Not knowing the difference between the two, I headed to the ones labeled stacks. That was what I wanted. Stacks of books, great heaps of books, shelf after endless shelf of books.
I had my hands on the handles of the doors before Fela's voice stopped me.
I'm sorry, it's your first time in here, isn't it?
I nodded, not letting go of the door's handles. I was so close, what was going to happen now?
The stacks are Arcanum only,
she said apologetically. She stood up and walked around the desk to the other set of doors.
Here, let me show you.
I reluctantly let go of the door's handles and followed her. Using both hands, she tugged one of the heavy wooden doors open, revealing a large, high-ceilinged room filled with long tables. A dozen students were scattered throughout the room reading. The room was well lit with the unwavering light of dozens of sympathy lamps. Fela leaned close to me and spoke in a soft voice.
This is the main reading area. You'll find all the necessary tomes used for most of the basic classes.
She blocked the door open with her foot and pointed along one wall to a long section of shelving with 300 or 400 books. More books than I had ever seen in one place before. Fela continued to speak softly.
It's a quiet place. No talking above a whisper.
I'd noticed that the room was almost unnaturally quiet.
If you want a book that isn't there, you can submit a request at the desk, she pointed. They'll find the book and bring it out to you.
I turned to ask her a question, and only then realized how close she was standing. It says a great deal about how enamored I was with the archives that I failed to notice one of the most attractive women in the university standing less than 6 inches away.
How long does it usually take them to find a book?
I asked quietly, trying not to stare at her.
It varies.
She brushed her long black hair back over her shoulder.
Sometimes we're busier than others. Some people are better at finding the appropriate books.
She shrugged and some of her hair swung back down to brush against my arm.
Usually no more than an hour.
I nodded, disappointed by not being able to browse the whole of the archives, but still excited to be inside. Once again, half a loaf was better than none.
Thanks, Fela.
I went inside, and she let the door swing shut behind me. But she came after me just a moment later.
One last thing, she said quietly. I mean, it goes without saying, but this is your first time here.
Her expression was serious.
The books don't leave this room. Nothing leaves the archives.
Of course, I said.
Naturally.
I hadn't known. Fela smiled and nodded.
I just wanted to make sure. A couple of years ago, we had a young gent who was used to carrying off books from his father's library. I'd never even seen Lauren frown before that or talk much above a whisper, but when he caught that boy in the street with one of his books...
She shook her head as if she couldn't hope to explain what she had seen. I tried to picture the tall, somber master angry and failed.
Thanks for the warning. Don't mention it.
Fela headed back out into the entrance hall. I approached the desk she had pointed out to me.
How do I request a book?
I asked the scriv quietly. He showed me a large log book, half filled with students' names and their requests. Some were requests for books with specific titles or authors, but others were more general requests for information. One of the entries caught my eye. Basil, Elish Lunar Calendar, History of Arturan Calendar. I looked around the room and saw the boy from Heme's class hunched over a book taking notes. I wrote, Quoth, the History of the Chandrian, Reports of the Chandrian and their Signs, Black Eyes, Blue Flame, etc. I went to the shelves next and started looking over the books. I recognized one or two from my studies with Ben. The only sound in the room was the occasional scratch of a pen on paper, or the faint bird-wing sound of a page turning. Rather than being unsettling, I found the quiet strangely comforting. Later, I was to find out that the place was nicknamed Tombs because of its crypt-like quiet. Eventually, a book called The Mating Habits of the Common Drakkas caught my eye, and I took it over to one of the reading tables. I picked it because it had a rather stylish, embossed dragon on the cover, but when I started reading,
I discovered it was an educated investigation into several common myths. I was halfway through the title piece, explaining how the myth of the dragon, in all likelihood, evolved from the much more mundane Dracus, when a scriv appeared at my elbow. Opening it, I was instantly disappointed. It was a collection of fairy stories. I flipped through it, hoping to find something useful, but it was filled with sticky, sweet adventure stories meant to amuse children. You know the sort, brave orphans trick the Chandrian, win riches, marry princesses, and live happily ever after. I sighed and closed the book. I had half expected this. Until the Chandrian killed my family, I thought they were nothing more than children's stories too. This sort of search wasn't going to get me anywhere. After walking to the desk, I thought for a long moment before writing a new line in the request ledger. Quoth, the history of the Order Amir, the origins of the Amir, the practices of the Amir. I reached the end of the line, and rather than start another one, I stopped and looked up at the scriv behind the desk. I'll take anything on the Amir, really, I said.
We're a little busy right now,
he said, gesturing to the room. Another dozen or so students had filtered in since I had arrived.
But we'll bring something out to you as soon as we can.
I returned to the table and flipped through the children's book again before abandoning it for the bestiary. The wait was much longer this time, and I was learning about the strange summer hibernation of Susquinian when I felt a light touch on my shoulder. I turned, expecting to see a scriv with an armload of books, or maybe Basil come to say hello. I was startled by the sight of Master Lauren looming over me in his dark master's robes.
Come,
he said softly, and gestured for me to follow. Not knowing what might be the matter, I followed him out of the reading room. We walked behind the scriv's desk and down a flight of stairs to a small, featureless room with a table and two chairs. The archives was filled with little rooms like this, reading holes designed to give members of the Arcanum a place to sit privately and study. Lauren laid the request ledger from Tomes on the table.
I noticed your request while assisting one of the newer scrivs in his duties,
he said.
You have an interest in the Chandrian and the Amir?
He asked. I nodded.
Is this in regard to an assignment from one of your instructors?
For a moment I thought about telling him the truth about what had happened to my parents, about the story I had heard in Tarbin. But Manet's reaction to my mention of the Chandrian had shown me how foolish that would be. Until I'd seen the Chandrian myself, I didn't believe in them. If anyone would have claimed to have seen them, I would have thought they were crazy. At best, Lauren would think I was delusional, at worst, a foolish child. I was suddenly pointedly aware of the fact that I was standing in one of the cornerstones of civilization, talking to the master archivist of the university. It put things in a new perspective for me. The stories of an old man in some dockside tavern suddenly seemed very far away and insignificant. I shook my head.
No, sir, it's merely to satisfy my curiosity.
I have a great respect for curiosity,
Lauren said with no particular inflection.
Perhaps I can satisfy yours a bit. The Amir were a part of the church back when the Aturan Empire was still strong. Their credo was Ivare Enim Yuge, which roughly translates as for the greater good. They were equal part knight-errant and vigilante. They had judiciary powers and could act as judges in both the religious and secular courts. All of them, to varying degrees, were exempt from the law.
I knew most of this already.
But where did they come from?
I asked. It was as close as I dared come to mentioning Scarpy's story.
They evolved from traveling judges,
Lauren said.
Men who went from town to town bringing the rule of law to small Arturan towns.
They originated in Artur, then?
He looked at me.
Where else would they have originated?
I couldn't bring myself to tell him the truth, that because of an old man's story, I suspected the Amir might have roots much older than the Arthurian Empire, that I hoped they might still exist somewhere in the world today. Lauren took my silence